All right, everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I am speaking with Dr. Cyrus Williams, a licensed professional counselor and an associate professor at Regent University. Dr. Cyrus, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Really excited to talk about this.
Yeah, me too. So let's start out by just hearing about how you got into the counseling profession in general, and then maybe transitioning into how you into this topic of the quarter life crisis in particular.
Yeah, well, I've been, you know, a counselor all my life. I think I've worked in universities, colleges, and universities around the country. It's just always been my thing. People have always told me, like many of the stereotypical, they told me that I've always been a good listener and been interested in helping people and helping people succeed. I started in higher education doing student services and working in kind of academic programs and student services programs, just working with low income and first generation college students. Trying to get them in college and through college. So I naturally progressed from that, which was kind of pseudo counseling, to go to area of licensed counseling, work with multiple populations, a lot of addictions counseling I did early in my career. I've worked with adolescents. I work right now with a lot of couples, doing a lot of couples counseling. But I've always, since I've been 18 years old, I've always been on college campuses.
I graduated from
college and stayed and started working at a college. And my entire life, I've worked on a college campus and I've done counseling on the side, but I've always been in, you know, big colleges, University of Connecticut, University of Florida. And I just love being around college students, helping them. And that kind of got me to the quarter life crisis, got me to my really passion for helping all people to realize their goals. But really for college age, a lot of traditional college age students, to realize their goal and help them through their mental health issues. So that's how I kind of morphed into this millennial quarter life crisis issue. And the quarter life crisis issue is, you know, if you work with people that age of 18 to 29, you know that generation is different than your generation. Not bad or good. We get a lot of millennial bashers, and I don't allow that. Okay, because every generation is different. Every generation is different. Every generation has its positive and negatives, and we like to bash. For some reason, we like to bash the millennials. I don't understand that.
Yeah, we really do. I saw an article, and I think it was Time Magazine or something that it was just raving about how egocentric the millennials are. And it felt kind of mean.
I had a class yesterday and I was like, we're not going to sit here and bash millennials. You know what I mean? That's not it. They have their negatives, but they have a lot of positives too. And we're not going to sit here and do that. You become the old man, get off of my lawn type of person. Like, we were better than them. But that's not true. But what it is the quarter life crisis. I started seeing these students come in with these very common issues. These 18 to 29 year olds, that's kind of those millennial generation. That's that time period of a lot of consternation, a lot of angst, a lot of issues. And I see these patterns that are coming up in them. And most people who work with this population see these patterns too. And they really can't, you know, find a word for it. And the word has been out for about a couple of years, about 2001, 2002, the quarter life crisis. And that's basically around that 25 year old, 22 year old, when they're in college, just out of college, stressed out, a mess, you know, trying to figure out what they're supposed to be doing and why. A little bit angry, too. There's a hint of anger that you can feel. And I never knew what the heck that was. I was like, what's the anger about? But the anger is about, you know what? I did everything. I was supposed to. Everybody's been patting me on my back and they're telling me to do this and this and this. And if I check these boxes, I will be successful. And now they're 25 and they have significant debt from higher education. There's no jobs. They're kind of behind, they feel, in terms of starting their careers. They're behind in terms of marriage and kids. Because they're putting these things forward of, I need to do these things in order to be successful. But then they're 26 years old, they've done all those things, and they're a little bit angry. They're a little bit angry at what is going on in their lives right now. So that manifests itself to anxiety, depression, isolation. Those things happen. Now, you got to be careful with the millennial population because isolation looks different than, you know, in past years. Isolation, past generations, isolation looks different in that they can be very visible because we have social media. So you can be very visible but still isolated. So that's difficult for them. Those are the patterns that I would see. So I started investigating in the Quarter Life Crisis, a book that's out in 2000, and I want to say two by one, Robbins and Wellner. They really kind of coined this term. In the New York Times, they had coined the terms. It was an online article, and then it was a book coining this term of this time period of 25, 21, 23, where this millennial population is just, they're at this crossroads in their lives, and there's a lot of anxiety, instability, fear. There's all of these choices and making choices. It's difficult to make. So it is a very difficult time for them, and they're feeling pressure because social media is saying that. Their peers are all looking like they're doing great and established friends and everything. When there was no internet, you just saw one or two of your high school friends. But now that there's internet, you see your high school friends your whole life, every day. And you see that they're doing well and you're not. We know that that's not true, right? We know Facebook is not true. We know when people keep having all these Instagram and Snapchat that it's just a very, we can put forth what we want to the world.
Yeah, so, that's a really good point. So I mean, everything you're saying strikes me personally because I feel like you're regurgitating my own experience. I'm 33, born in 83. So I roughly fall into that, you know, the high latter end of the millennials. And, this thing in the article that you had in Counseling Today was saying that and you said it already that we tend to feel like people have told us that if you try hard enough, you can do anything. Everything will work out as long as you try hard enough. And, then you graduate and you got some debt and you're really trying, but it's just not happening. So you're carrying this promise that people have made and weighing, you know, am I doing something wrong? Am I not trying hard enough? Or did I not try hard enough in trying to figure this out, as well as isolation, all these different things that come up. As I read about it, it's kind of saying that this is a relatively new thing, which to me makes a lot of sense because the internet age is also quite new. Things like social media are very new. As you were describing it, all of these factors run kind of collide into this one period of time, causing some serious distress. So, yeah, I really appreciate how you're explaining that.
Yeah, one of the things that occurs that has happened at the same time is a lot of significant things that have occurred that has made this kind of a real phenomenon now. Mm. One of those things happened, and I think people underappreciate the recession of the recession that this population had lived through. It's kind of like the Great Depression. The recession of 2000s, you know, was a huge part of their lives. Mm-hmm. So if you talk to somebody from 1929, the Depression really defined them. So if you talk to a millennial, they may not say the recession really defined them, but it organizes their world, because there was a time when you go to college, get a degree, you'll get a job. The unemployment, and more important, the underemployment is huge for this population, because now in the last 7, 8, 10 years, unemployment has switched around. It's getting better, right? But it's really not that. It's really the underemployment. It's really you have a master's degree and you're a barista at Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the millennials are affected significantly by unemployment, significantly. They can get a job, but are they going to get the job that they want to get, that they've been working their tails off to get? The other part of this is that they've been taught their whole life from society and their parents and their communities that they're great. It's just a different parenting. Parenting is very different for this population. Everybody gets a trophy. Mom and dad are very overly involved. So they've been getting pats on the back their whole lives. So, you know, at 21, 22, 23, when there's no more pats on the back and you got $150,000 in loans and you're living with your mom, you're out of college, your friends are gone. You don't know where to start. So you're kind of paralyzed with, okay, I got $150,000 in debt. I've got no job. I'm living with my parents. All my friends seem like they're doing well. Can't find a job. So what do? They go get a master's degree. You know what I mean? They go for a master's degree and then they go to a master's degree.
Yeah.
So there they are. They're in class, and I teach all master's level. I don't teach any undergrads anymore. So I teach all master's. So here they are. They're 25. So they're 25. They're like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm coming to school because I guess this is the best thing for me. So they build up another $50,000. But now here's the problem. Now they're 28, you know, and guess what? Their career has not started yet. Their relationships maybe have not started yet. Their marriage, their children, their house buying, all the milestones are delayed. Everything's delayed. So you're 26, you're coming in as a entry level counselor, say. All right? So you're 28, you're making $34,000. And your friends who just went to work, they're making more money than you are, and you have a master's degree and $150,000 in debt.
Yeah,
that is significant. It is paralyzing because you have all these choices to make. You're depressed because life is not working the way you're supposed to. You got all this debt. It's a tough time. So the 25s. Year olds where it's supposed to be carefree and they're loving life, they're really stressed out. They're really stressed out and they're really depressed.
Yeah. So as counselors, then when we're working with this population, how do we approach, 19 to 28 year olds or 30 year olds in a way that validates their experience and takes seriously the circumstance that they're in?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we have to do is to not minimize what's going on. I think we have consciously or subconsciously, we still don't believe that this is a big deal. It's kind of like when you work with middle schoolers and, you know, the middle schoolers, they have a little boyfriend and they break up and they think the whole world is terrible, and you're looking at them like, oh, this is not a big deal, you know? No, it's a huge deal. And it could be a life-altering deal if they make bad decisions, right? If that 13-year-old makes bad decisions by hurting herself or by giving her body away or something like that, it becomes a big deal. Same with this age group. We say, well, they're 25. They're going to work it out. Don't worry about it. This is the best time of their lives. If we don't engage them and treat them in a way that is respectful to what they're going through, then it can be a life-altering issue. So this quarter-life crisis becomes extended through the 30s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it comes, and then all of a sudden you're 45, and now you got a midlife crisis, right? The first thing I like to, you know, if I were talking to my counselor friends, is that you have to take this seriously. Now, is it a crisis for everybody? No, it's not. Sometimes it's just a transition. We got to figure out if it's a crisis or a transition, because you counsel a little bit different for transition issues and crisis issues, right? So determining that is important. But more importantly, is this to not minimize this time and this stress. Understand that this is an existential issue. This is who am I? What am I? Why was I born? I ask those kind of questions. Why were you born? What do you want your legacy to be? You know, real big questions. Real big questions to get them to think about things and not be so present-minded. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but not so present-minded, and start thinking about, okay, this is going to set me up for my life. I got to kind of think of a big picture now. I got to think about, how do I get myself unstuck here? What thoughts are productive and what thoughts are not productive? Mm-hmm. How am I hurting the situation? And how can I help the situation?
Yeah. That's it. It seems like the questions of existence are key in a lot of ways, because it's a period where those questions are already present as is, whether you're in a crisis or not. But when you're in the crisis, those become far more dominant in our minds.
Yeah. It is. Existentially, it's important. But let me tell you, this part of it is the answer to the problem, and this is not the answer, but this is what people think the answer to the problem is vocation. You know, okay. If I only get a good job, everything will be better. So I work with career and career development. I do a lot of that. I'm currently contracted to write a book that I've just started writing about career and career counseling. So when they come in, the only thing they want to talk about is, I have to get a better job, a good job. I have to, you know, it's all vocationally trained. It's all about that. So I talk about calling. I talk about purposeful work. It always turns to that, because they feel like that's the answer. I got to get a job, and I got to work in my calling, in my meaning, in my purpose. I got to work in that area. So you kind of got to go there, even though you don't want to go there. That's the answer to them. You know, the answer to them is a job. Even though we know the answer is not a job, because a job can help a lot. Don't get me wrong. We spend the significant amount of time at work, and it affects our mental state. So they want a job. So you can't be afraid to do some career kind of vocational calling, kind of purpose of work counseling. You can't be afraid to go there.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me that it's, you write about a holistic approach. So taking seriously questions of existence, as well as career questions, as well as just personal, like, you know, life issues, to focus singularly on any one of those would kind of miss the pot of stuff brewing in the person.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a conversation with someone, and they said, well, the answer is, and, you know, they said, well, the answer is they need decision-making skills. And I was like, wow, man, I wish the world was that linear and uncomplicated, is what you're saying. You know, that's akin to, you know, Mrs. Reagan saying, say no to drugs, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, that's going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
I say no to no. If I learn how to say no to drugs, the epidemic, the drug war is going to be over.
Yeah, yeah.
The world is way too complex and people are way too complex to have an answer like that. It has to be holistic. We have to talk about vocation because they want to talk about vocation because they think that's the answer. So you can't just throw that aside. We got to talk about big things like you got to talk about their existence, their legacy, their wants and desires besides of just a job. We have to talk about those things. I try to separate vocation with calling, you know, because in legacy, those words are very different. Work, legacy, calling, all very different. So I kind of talk about those things. And then we have to talk about just understanding that this is a developmental stage, right?
Yeah.
This is a stage in their life. So I came up with the needs approach to this counseling of quarter life crisis. And this needs approach, really the number one part of the needs approach, and I think we can't do enough of this, is to normalize that they're in a developmental stage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're walking around, your clients are walking around, your students are walking around with this idea that they're all screwed up and everybody's doing so well. So you have to have those conversations about this is normal in that your generation is going through this. And just because your Facebook, Instagram friends are not saying it, they're still struggling with this also.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
That's kind of doing exactly what you were saying, the opposite of kind of the pull up your bootstraps, get it together. This isn't a big deal. You know, it's all going to work its way out. But it's kind of the opposite of doing that, saying, hey, yeah, this sucks. It's tough. This is real for you. Like, you know, but you're not the only one out there going through it. And this is, like you said, a developmental transition stage.
Right. And I found what's liberating, besides normalizing it, that's liberating. But to give it a word is liberating. Mm. The quarter life crisis, when I say that to people, it's like the shackles come off of them, right?
They're like,
oh my gosh. They're like, oh yeah. And you don't even have to really explain it to them. you know what I mean? They kind of get it. They're like, oh, I get it. I get it. 25, you know, years old, 20 years old, 30 years old maybe, and it's just a crisis right now to figure out where I'm doing and where I'm going. So just the word is liberating, you know, the quarter life crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
I give them books too. Like this is real legitimate. Okay, let me give you a book. Let me give you an article. There's some great BuzzFeed videos out there that are fun and funny. I send them two or three of those videos. I tell them to look at them. They can laugh at themselves a little bit. It's a serious situation, but we're trying to normalize it. As much as we can. So the needs approach to this kind of crisis counseling has to do with normalizing. That's the N. And the E is existential counseling. That's what we're talking about. We have to do some existential counseling. We got to talk beyond what they're talking about. I mean, beyond today and what they're doing and meaning of life and all that.
Yeah.
In my practice, I saw him two days ago. I had him reading Viktor Frankl.
Mm-hmm.
I had him, you know, kind of the meaning of life type of stuff. And it's heavy, hard work, right? That reading is not easy.
Yeah.
It's not beach reading, but it really is helpful for them, because he was a counseling student, helpful for him to kind of understand the struggle of existence.
Yeah, yeah.
The struggle of who you are and what you are, and even through difficult, difficult scenarios to kind of orientate yourself to the world differently.
Mm.
And to see beyond this stage and see the meaning of life and going through all those things. So go ahead.
Oh, I was thinking that I was just talking to a friend today about she's a nurse, and I asked if she were to move back to the States, if she would, you know, keep nursing. Is that what she feels like she's kind of called into, and she said, mm-hmm. "No, I didn't. I graduated, and when I started my first job, I realized I didn't like nursing at all." But it, I think we, you know, these days in school, you're often kind of pressed in the direction of you got to go from high school, get the right major, you get the right major, you get the right job, and from there it's easy peasy. But there's so many people, I think, who get into the real world and are like, wait a second, this isn't what I expected. This isn't the kind of work I wanted to do. It's not as meaningful as I was hoping. And those are real questions of how do I stay in this? Do I do something different? Is this bringing me life? Is it not?
Yeah, you're really touching on some things that I didn't touch on. I kind of glossed over, and that is that, you know, these quarter life crisis folks, these millennial folks, are under significant pressure. Mm-hmm. They've been tested their whole lives since middle school and high school, and they're expected to have a career and they're expected to go for it. You know, when I was coming up, I didn't have all those pressures. It was just like, I bump into whatever I want to bump into. And if it works, it works, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This population have been told their whole life, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And they've been working their tails off doing that. I worked at the University of Florida, and these students, they wanted to be a Florida Gator since they were 7 years old, right?
Yeah.
And they've been working their tails off to get into the law school, get into government. And so they have been so crazed on this that they finally get there, finally get in. And they've been pressured, and parents have been pressuring them. They get in, they get there, and, you know, they're 18. They're like, I don't even like this. I don't want to be an engineer. You know, when was that my goal?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they're pressured, guys, and then they graduate, right? And they're like, I don't want to be a chemical engineer. Mm. So what do I do? I go get a master's degree. That's what they do. They go get a master's degree. And then again, that delays their launch, you know, trying to get launched in the world.
Yeah. Okay. So how about that second E? So the first is normalized. The first E then is existential questions. And then the second E.
That's empowering. Okay. So the normalizing and empowering kind of go together. And that's when you kind of, you give them videos, you give them a book, you give them language to kind of empower them. Mm-hmm. So they feel not like a victim, they feel empowered. Okay, I got this. I understand what this is. I'm liberated now. Now what do I do? So they're no longer a victim. We're kind of trying to turn the corner from, you know, victimized to, okay, empowered now, what do I do next? And a lot of that's going to be getting some information, getting some knowledge and some details about what's going on and how they can move forward.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the second E. It's empowering, and then existential counseling. You get to the D, and the D is really a developmental perspective.
Okay.
You gotta have a counseling. As a counselor, you should have a theory, right? Mm. You should be operating from a theory. And when you're working with this population, you want to go from a developmental kind of theory. You want to go from, if you want to go to traditional mainstream, you can go through Piaget, you know, kind of theories and phases. And you just want to counsel from that perspective. You don't want to counsel from a perspective of anything other than this is a stage in your life. And then you kind of look at the stages in life and you say, okay, here we are here.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are. And this is what this stage is all about.
That connects really well to, you know, I've found this really helpful with adolescents. I had listened to a series of lectures by a guy named Bob Bloom at Johns Hopkins on adolescence. And he makes the point that what happens biologically in adolescence is second only to what happens in the womb for a person. So that the amount of change that's happening biologically for an adolescent is literally only second to when they were being formed in the womb. And so when I work with adolescents and kind of say, hey, this is a huge biological part of your development. You got to give yourself a break. It's really liberating to put it in perspective because it says, hey, I'm not crazy. It's like the normalizing part. I'm not crazy. This is, this is a real major change happening. It's tough, and that's just how it is.
Yeah. It doesn't make it easier, but make some sense of it. Sense of it. All the Erickson models in terms of developmental, you can talk about intimacy and isolation around 20 to 25 years old. You can talk about identity crisis. You can talk about all those things. I think, because they're old enough, they can get it. They're old enough. You're not working with a 10-year-old who can't really do those things. This age group, they can get it. If you're talking vocationally, you can talk about James Mosher. You can talk about Super. You can talk about Holland because they too have these stages. And in those stages, it talks about this crossroads time period. So there's lots and lots of developmental theorists, traditional as well as career specific theorists, who can help you kind of counsel through the developmental process.
I think
a lot of this has to be kind of psychoeducational.
To kind of tell them
what's going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's almost serves as a mechanism of peace. When you're given that kind of framework, it's almost like a peace offering. Like, hey, okay, I can be at peace with where I'm at, even though it's tough. It's not just me. I'm not nuts. I'm here now, but I'll be somewhere different in the future.
Yeah. The other part of the D here, and it's two E's and it's really two D's, but it looks really silly. It looks really silly when I put two D's.
Yeah, it's tough with the acronyms in counseling. You gotta work hard to make them fit.
Yeah. So I didn't put two D's, but there's really two D's in that D. And I didn't need to put a D squared up there. I'm thinking about it. But the other D is decision making. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with being in a quarter life crisis. You sell them that you're going to get out of this pretty soon, right? And you got to go through some things. You're going to do some counseling, and we're going to talk through some things. But the problem is you can make this a lot worse, as I was telling you. You can make this a lot worse. You can buy houses that you can't afford. You can get married when you're not supposed to get married. You're really feeling pressured to get married. Mm-hmm. You can not pay your bills. You can self-medicate because you're depressed by using drugs and alcohol. There's some decision-making. There's opening new charge accounts because you don't have the money. There's all kinds of bad decisions that you can make to make this quarter-life crisis worse, right? Because after 25, God willing, you're 35, right?
Yeah.
So you want to be able to get through this nicely so your 30s are not that same quarter life crisis. You've extended it by bad decision making. So you have to talk to them about, okay, these are some things that you have to be concerned about right now. Like, you're in debt already. You don't need to buy a house right now to get some stuff together. Okay. You don't need to self-medicate some of this stress and anxiety by using marijuana, which is very common. People are using by using marijuana, smoking marijuana, by using drugs and alcohol. Okay. To kind of fill this kind of isolation, loneliness, anxiety, just paralyzed with decisions. So you have to have those conversations about how you can really make this worse.
That made me think of, in my faith tradition, Christianity, we talk about the already and not yet. And it made me think of for people in this period, it's tough because it's kind of this already, not yet place where you are, isn't necessarily where you're going to end up, and you have to find a way to continue doing life in the tension, like you're saying, without making decisions that are going to compromise where you end up. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I teach at a faith-based institution, so we're always bringing up scripture that kind of falls into line of, you know, letting God order your steps and, you know, not getting weary and, you know, just really helping people to understand that, that they have to survive this and really ideally is surviving with excellence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're in it. You're struggling in it, but you don't want to make it worse. You don't want to be your own worst enemy. You certainly don't want your own worst enemy.
Yeah.
The S, let me talk to you about the S. The S is really about screening and assessment. Now, it's important for the counselor to understand, to endeavor to understand if this is a transitional issue or if this is a crisis.
Okay.
Transitional and crisis are two different things. So you want to screen. You want to give them an anxiety assessment. You want to give them an inventory about depression. You want to see where they're at. You want to see if this is an adjustment issue, right? Is it an adjustment diagnosis or if this is real, you know, clinical depression? The good thing about millennials is a couple things. Number one is they're not so stigmatized about counseling. So it's not like generations past. They understand counseling. They're not scared of it. They don't see the way my generation saw it as much. Right. That's number one. Number two is they're not shy about taking psychotropic medication either. Mm. Right. They're OK. A lot of them are taking ADD since they're Ritalin since they were kids, you know, or anything else. So it's not a stigma there. So if they have to. If that's appropriate, they're not afraid of that, those things. So they want to come to counseling. They're okay. My millennials come to counseling all the time. They like it. Now, they don't stay in counseling because they're millennials, right?
Yeah, we talked more to that. That okay. struck me as really interesting.
Yeah. Now, they don't care. They see counseling in a great way, and I love it because they will come. They're like, listen, I need to talk to somebody. And they go and they talk. Now, here's the thing. You have to, as a counselor, treat them as millennials and not as Gen X's, right? Mm. So it has to be solution focused. It has to be, they need to know what's going on. One of the jokes I always tell my millennials is, I never knew what a rubric was until you guys were born. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know I never seen a rubric until you guys were born. This population needs a rubric, and the rubric is, what are we doing? What's everything's going to happen? What exactly? How am I going to get the points? What's the outcome? Mm. They really want to know that, right? They want to see what's going on, what's the outcome, and why. For me in school, it was like you write the paper, the teacher tells you that's wrong or that's right.
Yeah.
Now, up front, they want to know everything and how many points for each thing. Same with counseling, right? Same with counseling. They want to know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how long is it going to take?
Hmm.
Because they're not going to be in counseling forever if they don't see stuff fast, quick, fast, in a hurry, or at least they don't see your path, what path you're going down.
Yeah.
So it's really important that you lay out what you're doing and why you're doing it, and they will hang in there for that.
Yeah, I like that in so much as it makes the counselor fit the client as opposed to making the client fit the counselor. So meeting the clients where they are in this, you know, for this population in particular, not trying to fit them into long-term psychotherapy or whatnot. If that's not who they are or what they're really looking for, the counselor has to do their work of adapting the counseling to the client. So I think that's a really strong point here.
Yeah, that is critical. That is critical. We have to fit them because they won't show up. Hmm. They won't. Generationally, they're different. So I can't do the things that I do with a 50-year-old that I do with a 25-year-old.
Hmm.
I can't. I give a 50-year-old homework to do some things and they'll do it. I give a 25-year-old different kind of homework, right? I need you to go and I'm going to send you some links because they love it, right? I'm going to send you these links, okay? And I want you to look at these videos and then I want you to kind of write a quick little journal about what you saw of these videos, mm-hmm. right? They will sit down with those videos and they'll write it. And then I'll say, I want you to further look into this. I want you to go to this website and look into it. That's a different kind of homework, right? Yeah. Than I would for my 50-year-old homework.
Yeah, you're right? using the mediums of the mm-hmm. of your client as opposed to using the mediums of yourself. You know, if it's a population that uses social media, the internet, video, music, mm-hmm. whatever, right. you're moving toward the client in the language they speak as a moving, trying to make them move towards you right. to understand your language, which I think is really important.
One of the things, I'm sorry, I'm going to say one more thing. Okay.
Go ahead.
One of the things that I assign some of my clients, definitely my students, but is to make a digital story. And a digital story is a wonderful way for them to use videos and pictures and music to kind of tell their life story, where they're at now and where they're going to be. So those are one of the things I use a lot. I love doing the digital stories.
Yeah.
And they blow me away every time because they spend a lot of time and effort on it.
That's beautiful. We could do a whole nother episode on digital stories, I think.
I'd love to.
Well, okay, I don't want to, you know, I'm conscious of the time. We are coming to our end. So this was a great conversation. Thank you so much. If listeners wanted to get a hold of you or, you know, try to learn more about this particular population or the core life crisis, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can certainly love some email, cwilliams2@regent.edu. Certainly can call me. My phone number is, area code is 757-352-4576. I really encourage, there's a lot of information out about the quarter life crisis. There's a couple of books out. I have the article in Psychology Today. I have another article that I submitted already, and hopefully that'll be out. I'm hoping by the end of this year to have another article out that's much more empirically based. We need some empirically based information out here. So there's not a lot out there, but I would recommend the book on the quarter life crisis, because that will give you real specific details about what's going on. It will have some statistics also, but online it's much more statistics online to kind of give you some empirical information.
Okay, yeah, we'll put a link to on your email as well as to that book on the feed that we put in. So thank you again so much. This is a really great conversation.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great. And listeners, thank you for tuning in again. If you like this episode, please hop on iTunes and give it a rating. It really helps create more exposure for the podcast, as well as you can check out the website, thethoughtfulcounselor.com. And I believe it's hooked up to Facebook and Twitter, but I am a bad millennial. I don't actually use social media, so I'm trying to figure that out. So take a look, and we'll see you next time.